Today's show, we have Stephanie Donahue. She is the co-founder of Pate Group. We met through a mutual friend here in Cincinnati, and we're going to talk about movement in the industry towards Office 365.
If you're ready to learn how technology is driving business innovation in Cincinnati and beyond, you're tuned in to the right podcast. Join us for interviews and discussions with business leaders, innovators, and visionaries. With our host, Sam Schulte, CEO of Unstoppable Software. This is Unstoppable Talk.
Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. So maybe a good place to get started here is, how did you get into this field and how did you sort of start out?
You know, I think a lot of people this day and age that are in IT didn't start there. They kind of come from other industries or other backgrounds. And I'm probably one of the few people that actually has a degree in computer science. So I started at Ohio State. I kind of knew in high school that I wanted a computer science degree. And I went and did that at Ohio State. And I came out and just, you know, I'd take any kind of job that I could be hands-on with. I figured out pretty quick that I didn't want to code, and maybe opposite of you. So my background, I ended up getting involved in like a help desk scenario, so service industry. Figured out pretty quick that I like to work with people. And so I kind of went from there, kind of came up through the ranks, help desk, network admin. And here I am today, still doing IT techie stuff. And I love it. It's great.
Great. And are you from Cincinnati here originally?
No, actually, I'm from kind of, I don't know, maybe Northwest Ohio, okay. Findlay, Ohio originally. Of course, I spent 5 years in Columbus, Ohio State, and then ended up down here in Cincinnati. I've been here, though, for, gosh, I think about 15 years.
Okay. And how long have you been working there at Pate Group?
So I started Pate Group about 7 years ago. And I had previously worked for a consulting firm doing exactly what I do now, and I loved it. But things were really transitioning, and I kind of saw a split that was happening. A lot of the folks that I worked with, they did a fantastic job with the really technical piece of the work. They were doing exchange migrations and domain migrations and things like that. And I had an opportunity to kind of branch off, and I was doing SharePoint, which was a little more collaboration focused. And I decided, you know, that maybe I wasn't quite the right fit for the all tech. I could do the work, but again, I really like to work with people. And being able to get into a technology like SharePoint, it's a collaboration tool, allowed me to find that perfect merger of working with people, working with the business, but also using my technical skills. And I started Pate Group because I saw this difference happening where the company wasn't always knowing how to address collaboration because they were so technology focused. And we came out to really kind of make that splash in the collaboration space in a slightly different way.
Yeah, because collaboration is a human process and not a computer process in a lot of ways, right?
Very much so. A lot of change management, a lot of hand-holding. It's not, you know, when you do an exchange migration, exchange hosts email, if you're not familiar, and when you do a migration of email, you move the email over to the new server, it's upgraded. Now they're moving to the cloud, right? And when you get over there, you're done. If email's running, that's it. That's kind of all you have to do. But with collaboration tools, and specifically in Office 365 is our space, it's a whole new world out there, and you're trying to teach people how to work in a different way. Whereas, you know, email, you just kind of use it and it works and that's it. But when you're rolling out collaboration tools, you're trying to teach people, here's a different way to communicate, here's a different way to work, and this is why it's important and why you need to do it, because you also need their buy-in. So it's really a much different process to engage with the business and to figure out what's going to solve their pain points. Because if you don't have their buy-in, they're not going to use the tool. And it's a very different conversation.
Yeah. And so maybe another question is, if you could describe, you know, the Microsoft ecosystem around this, I mean, and sort of where collaboration fits in that. What are some of the tool names that are used for that? For folks that might not be familiar with all those layers, what does that look like?
So what we used to have, we say on-premises, the old school way, you know, Exchange was your email, that was on-prem, you had SharePoint maybe installed, you had a SharePoint server specifically, and that was kind of it. And now as we move into the cloud, we have this ecosystem called Office 365. And now Microsoft 365 as well, if you kind of go outside of that. So we're talking a whole ecosystem of computers, and everything's in the cloud. So you now have email in the cloud, you have collaboration in the cloud, meaning SharePoint might be your intranet. It might be file storage for you, kind of replacing that concept of having file shares. You now have Microsoft Teams, which if you're familiar with Slack, it's definitely a Slack competitor. We'd like to think it's a Slack killer. You have this concept of being able to have conversation with each other and kind of that conversational format in a stream, more like your social media that you use every day, like Facebook or like Twitter, where you can engage with each other. But it's something that everybody in the team can see. You're kind of pulling all those conversations out of your email. And then outside of that, even we've got tools that will manage video for you. You've got tools like Planner that will manage your tasks. And then you've got forms and workflow. So Power Apps, Microsoft Flow, those are all things that are improving business processes around you. And, you know, that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. There's so many productivity tools available in Office 365. I think that's really where we come in, because it's overwhelming and it's a big change for a lot of organizations. And so we just come in and say, hey, we understand this is overwhelming and it's a lot to take in. We know you're smart folks, but let us help you get introduced to the tools. Let us help you understand how you could use them and how others in your industry are using them. And that's really where we get started with them.
Okay. And you mentioned that I think it was Teams you think is like a Slack killer. So why do you think that? I mean, how does it face off against Slack, which is pretty popular?
Oh, yeah. And you have your diehard Slack folks, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll tell you, oh, nothing's better than Slack. But the reality of the situation is that a lot of organizations already own Exchange. Mm-hmm. And with that, they're starting to purchase Office 365. And why do you want to pay for an additional third-party tool if you already own Teams? So kind of combined with the fact that Teams has come a long way since it was first released, and it really has most of the core functionality that you're going to need. So, you know, preferences aside, Microsoft Teams is going to provide you that core collaboration platform where you can work with each other, you can store files, and really a place that becomes kind of the center of your work in your day-to-day. I mean, it's your conferencing tool, it's your file sharing tool, it's your conversation tool. I'm in Teams all day long now. So from a competitive standpoint, I think it covers the same space, but a lot of folks already own it. And it kind of comes down to, well, why go elsewhere when you've got it already at no additional cost?
Sure. And so when you are, you're helping customers implement this and configure and customize and all that, are you also, are you a Microsoft partner, or are you reselling their stuff as well, you know, the actual licenses to them, or how do you kind of work with Microsoft, I guess?
So we are Microsoft partners in the collaboration, portals and collaboration space, as well as cloud productivity. And we also, I'm a Microsoft regional director. I was recently accepted into the program. We also staff 3 Microsoft MVPs. So we have very close ties in with the product group. We're working with those guys constantly. We've got pretty close ties into Microsoft. We're definitely looking to deepen that partnership. We're also looking at selling licensing here in the next year as well. So that relationship in place, very, very important to us. Everything moves really quickly in the cloud, and so you want to make sure that you've got the right connections so that you can stay ahead of what's happening next, because you don't want to do something that, you know, you don't want to end up painting yourself in a corner or making a decision that you don't want to customize something and then find out they're rolling out a new piece of functionality that essentially just made the customization you paid for irrelevant, right? So we want to make sure that those things, you're aware that they're in the pipeline, and all of that becomes really important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, making some changes to something that, you know, is going to be a new bundled feature you didn't even need to do, but you didn't know it was coming. You see that a lot.
It's hard to keep up with. You need a partner to help you out, right? That's where we come in.
So for companies that are using this, so when you look at like collaboration workspace, have you seen that that's allowed them to allow a lot more people to work from home? Is it driving them more in that area, or is it, you know, just folks in the office that are just not having to leave their cubicle as much, or, you know, how does that affect that flexibility, I guess.
Definitely. Modern workplace includes the flexibility to work where you are. And that's not necessarily just at home. It's at the coffee shop. It's I'm waiting for my kid to finish soccer and I have nothing else to do. So I can kind of spin through the messages and see what's going on. I do that frequently as a traveler. I do a lot of sales. I travel across the country to meet with customers and I'm always on the go. I'm in an Uber. I'm at the airport. I'm at a hotel. Like I can get to my stuff no matter where I am. I don't need VPN access anymore. And I get these push notifications to my phone. So even as I'm out and about, I can see if I want to. Now you can turn these off. You don't like push notifications. I like them a lot. And Microsoft Teams will actually send me notifications as I'm on the go. And I can kind of glance down, see what the message is, determine its importance. And if I want to respond right away, I can do that from my phone. Really great app, super easy to use. And I don't have to mess with all that VPN stuff, which is really, that's been key for us, for those on the go. And our team specifically, we are spread all over the country. So for us to be able to work together on projects, on internal initiatives, we're on Teams all day long because there's only maybe 20% of us in the office at any given time.
Yeah, I always find with notifications like that, I'll enable a bunch. I'll turn on, you know, Slack, or I mean, I probably have 50 different apps that could message me, and I'll enable a bunch, and then I'm just getting slammed with them. Sometimes duplicate ones, you know, and then you cut back and for the ones you actually care about. So it's always a little bit of like an ebb and flow to that. But I think that, you know, people being able to work on something when it's needed and not say, well, you got to wait till I get to the office the next day. You know, I think there's a huge impact of productivity with that. Of course, the downside is then you're kind of always working too, especially if you're, you know,
well, that's what the quiet modes are for. You do have a setting where you can set, okay, this is my evening mode. I'm done. I don't want notifications anymore. So that is your choice on, you know, maybe how often you want to check in on what's going on at work.
Sure. Sure. I wanted to go back for a moment. You talked about getting a computer science degree at The Ohio State there, University, which I'm required to call it that, evidently, from my OSU friends.
Yes, you know they're trying to patent the
I saw that
right
in the
now.
Word the,
yes,
yeah.
That's interesting.
So I got my computer science degree at University of Pittsburgh. I guess it's the University of Pittsburgh. I don't know. But I do think that, like you said, coming out a lot of times, I mean, of course, it's great to be able to have that technical background, but what really can allow you to leap ahead is if you can sort of straddle that fence between, you know, the business world and tech. So I guess for folks that are maybe on the other end of that, do you think that it's still, you know, a computer science degree is still the right choice for someone maybe who just started in college to go into, or should they look more into, you know, there's other degrees out there that are more about the management, you know, MIS or whatever out there?
I think what's great is that there's a lot of options right now as it relates to computer science, and I think it's still a fantastic degree. I think that for me, you know, I didn't end up being a coder, and so potentially I didn't have to have the degree that I got to do what I do now, but I think it's a fantastic background to have. I have that ability to understand what's going on, at least at a high level with my development team, even if I'm not the one who sits and does the coding. There's a deeper level of understanding there. So I think it's a great thing to do. I think it gets you really good exposure into the different technologies. And now a lot of the universities are using, you know, whether it's a Chromebook or Office 365 or whatever, they're using a lot of these technologies now to just engage. Like my kids, my sixth grader, my ninth grader, they're using Microsoft Teams at school. And that's, you know, maybe less common at that age group, but very common in the college age group. And so I think being able to get in there, get exposure, and then I think, too, it's important to co-op. Go find what you like. And because that's how I figured out, okay, maybe I don't enjoy coding, but I, you know, I got my degree, but then I was also co-oping, so I knew network administration really clicked for me. And that was really my hands-on learning that I still use to this day. That's a little more relevant maybe than what I had in the classroom. I think degrees are still good. I think it doesn't hurt you to not have one once you've got some years of experience under your belt. So, yeah. You know, I see benefits to both.
Well, it's funny because a lot of my co-op or internships were around network administration as well, which is great because I use that a lot because a lot of times developers that only know the code and they're like, I don't understand why this network card isn't working or something. I can come in and fix that. I guess it's another skill that they have in your tool belt, right? So certainly is a good thing to have.
That and the networking you learn in college, right?
Right. I'm curious, like you mentioned, at your kid's school, they're using Microsoft Teams. At my kid's school, they're using Google Classroom. We use Google, Google Office, or I don't know, they keep on changing the name. It used to be Google Apps for Domains or something. And, I got that 12 years ago. We still use it. We've always used it. Where do you think does Microsoft beat that, in your opinion, and how so?
I think that in the small business, when it comes to choosing applications for a small business, you really need ready-made software because you don't have the staff that's going to sit there and customize it for what you need, right? Case in point for us, for a long time, we really struggled from a project management standpoint. Before Office 365 came out, we didn't have Teams. We're trying to customize SharePoint to make it what we needed. And that's hard when you have a small staff and you're running a million miles an hour. So I think, probably very competitive one-to-one when you come to small business. Mm-hmm. As you get into larger organizations where we've seen them struggle, with Google is the scale and really having Microsoft's done a really nice job on the security and compliance side of the house and getting those extra layers in place that you really need once you get into, HIPAA and SOX compliance and, maybe government cloud is another example, right? They have all these different layers of protection in addition to the collaboration tool functionality. Mm-hmm. So once you get into that larger scale, larger amount of people, that's really where we see Microsoft's strength and they really do a nice job meeting the needs of those larger customers. So in all fairness, like I said, I think they're fairly equivalent in the small business level, but of course I have a strong preference for Microsoft. I think it's a great tool for small business too.
Well, it's interesting. It's a fair point that, because all the Google Apps stuff kind of evolved out of the personal Gmail world, right? Mm-hmm. And Microsoft probably evolved down from Enterprise Exchange down to, hey, can we do something that, someone can use on a one-person company, which, you can do with Office 365. You wouldn't have bought an Exchange server for yourself. I mean, people did. But,
Yeah. So that's actually been one of the big transitions we've seen. I've been in the mid-market space a really long time. Most of my career has been in that, maybe 500 users to 3,000-4,000 user space. And so we always kind of felt left out with Microsoft. They always focused on the large enterprise. We call it the ivory tower, right? Everything's perfect. You have to do it this way. But when you only have a handful of people working or, 50 people working, it's not the same experience as when you have 10,000 users, 20,000 users. But what's happened with 365 is that Microsoft is now embracing the mid-market too. Mm-hmm. They see the value because let's just take PayGroup, for example, right? When we first got started, we were trying to figure out, okay, how do we afford to spin up servers? How do we afford to, do we need a data center? How do we have backups? All this extra cost that just layer on top. We have to sit and install updates. Like, who has time to do Windows Server updates when you're running a brand new business? Now we have the cloud, you just Office 365, you spin a tenant up, and it's just there. Mm-hmm. You have disaster recovery. You have that ability to lean on backups from Microsoft. You may need extra too, but all of that stuff is just there. It's in place. You don't worry about updates. You don't worry about downtime. It's just easy. It's the easy answer for small business. Mm-hmm. And then you still have the ability to scale into it. So you don't have to worry that you're going to outgrow the solution. It grows with you.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, it can handle 10,000 employees if you want it to.
Or 80,000.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Bigger.
Sure. Yeah. with those bigger customers, I guess really any kind of mid-sized company as well, what are you seeing or what have you seen sort of the adoption rate for the cloud solutions versus the on-premise stuff? And I don't even know, obviously Microsoft will allow you to keep it on-premise, I'm assuming they don't force you to go into the cloud.
Well, you can keep things on-premise, But the big thing is eventually, and this is what we're seeing now, we still have customers coming to us saying, I'm running SharePoint Server 2007 and I need to do something. What should I do? And they're asking, do we stay on premises? Do we go with SharePoint 2019 on-prem, which is fully supported? Do we move to the cloud? And I will tell you, 99.9% of those scenarios will move to the cloud. We are very cloud heavy business, and our customers, the only ones who stay on premises, have some kind of blocker, either at the management level. There's basically not a reason to stay on premises unless you have headquarters in another country and they don't want your data in the US cloud, those kind of things. But there's not a functionality blocker.
Yeah.
You can basically, anything you can do on premises, you can do in the cloud. So it usually comes down to policy, or we're not ready for the cloud because we need to take some time and do our security and compliance review and figure out how we protect what's in the cloud. Maybe that'll slow it down, but there's no reason you can't get there.
Yeah, I think for the cloud solutions we're deploying, we hear the resistance about, you know, well, we're Sarbanes-Oxley compliant, so we can't put it in the cloud. Like, no. Like, that's not, it's mostly misunderstandings, you know?
Yeah, and it's even easier. There's all these like ready-made policy templates that you can use now. You just kind of go in. And so Microsoft's trying to meet you in the middle. What they'll tell you is, yes, we provide the tools to allow you to be compliant. It is up to you, the customer, to come in and understand these tools and deploy the policies you need in order to meet that compliance. Yeah. Also, where we come in, right? Again, there's a lot of stuff out there. How do we use the tool? What kind of policies are available? What are the capabilities? Those are all things you can, you know, if you're feeling overwhelmed, reach out, find a partner. The Microsoft tech community also has a tremendous amount of information on that. It's a really great place.
Well, and I think people sometimes object to security and just thinking, oh, my stuff's going to be in some data center I can't walk through, I can't see, perhaps, you know, in a Microsoft data center, an Azure data center somewhere. And I always sort of say, you know, who do you think has better security resources? You know, I mean, if you're a 50, 500, even 5,000 employee company, you're not beating what Microsoft or Google or Apple or any of the big guys are doing in their data centers.
That's very true. Yeah. They're checking and running testing every day to try and make sure and stay ahead of that. And, you know, for us, again, being a small business, spam filters and phishing, anti-phishing filters with the advanced threat protection that's available now in 365. For us, I went in there, I enabled the policy, and all of a sudden it was catching all of those phishing emails that we were struggling with across the team. You know, people are reporting things. It was that easy to turn it on.
Yeah.
Like you didn't have that on premises before. So just looking for little things like that make a huge impact.
Well, and you can't afford to let, if you're doing stuff on premise, you can't afford to let it get out of date.
Yep.
You know, that sort of stuff. I mean, because, you know, it only takes, you know, to be 1 hour behind the latest patch or something, and you'll get nailed by something like that, or a phishing email leak through, you know, sort of thing.
So, yep.
Now, you're also a Microsoft MVP.
Yes.
And you mentioned that earlier, that you have a couple of those on your staff. Talk about that program at a high level, what it is for folks that aren't familiar with it. How you get it and what you got it for.
Sure. So the Microsoft MVP program is basically an award that Microsoft gives to people who participate in the community. And when I say community, I mean these are folks that are going out into the world to share Microsoft goodness with everyone, but they're not necessarily getting paid for it. So things like SharePoint Saturday events in your local area, other conferences, like SharePoint Fest and SP TechCon, you know, North American Collaboration Summit's another one. There's all these conferences all over the place, in addition to the ones that Microsoft puts on. And the folks that are Microsoft MVPs are going out and they're either answering your questions on the forums, they are tweeting, they're blogging, they're speaking at conferences. So we just, you know, for me, it was just having a passion for the technology, being able to go out and share that with others is exciting and it's fun. It gets us out of the office a little bit, but it also gives us a fantastic network of people to rely on. I may not be an expert on, it's hard. It's 365 has so many tools. How could I possibly be an expert on everything? I'm not, but I know the right person to call because I know someone within that network that is an expert within that particular area of 365. So, and they have MVPs for other things too, for Azure, for Exchange. You know, it's been a constantly evolving thing along with the technology, but you can find Microsoft MVPs across any of the Microsoft stack. Mm-hmm.
And what is the sector specialization you got it for?
So I'm under the Office Servers and Services branch, which is specifically kind of started as a SharePoint MVP and has evolved now because, of course, we include Microsoft Teams, being that Teams rides on SharePoint. And so we're a little more inclusive there.
Okay, yeah. Great. So when you look at back when you started your company 7 years ago, what was sort of your first big break? You know, first big customer project you got, and what was the real first game-changing thing you did, you think, that put you on the path you're on?
Yes, I think I have a couple answers there. You know, I was fortunate. You know, the community here in Cincinnati is fantastic, and people kind of follow people and maybe not necessarily companies. And so early on in the business, my best and earliest customers were those I had already worked with. Mm-hmm. So that was very much appreciated. And I don't know if I can, you know, I don't want to drop names, but they know who they are and they're near and dear to my heart for giving me a chance early on. You know, but okay. So the biggest game changer that we really had with a customer, early on with Pate Group, we had the opportunity to work with an organization. They were a global manufacturing firm, and they had come from this space where, as you know, in the automobile industry really took a hit a while back and financially really struggled. And so when we got engaged with this organization, they had a .NET intranet that was ancient, right? It was really old. It was all text-driven, difficult to update, difficult to find information on what they were looking for. And the great thing was they had this director that really understood where they needed to go. And as they started coming out of this financial dip, they were going, oh my gosh, all of our technology, all of our applications, they've all been homegrown. They've been, you know, Band-Aid after Band-Aid, and it's time to upgrade. It's what do we do? Where do we even get started? That first meeting, we had to talk about the difference between intranet and internet. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was bare bones because, to their, you know, credit, they had people that had worked there their entire careers. They didn't have any exposure to other technologies. And that's not uncommon for large organizations. And it speaks to how well they must treat their employees, which is great. But when it comes to technology, they just really had no idea where to start. Mm-hmm. And what was great about the person we were working with at the time, he truly understood what was next. But they had a failed SharePoint implementation. They tried to move some policies and procedures into the cloud. It didn't go well. And they're like, I don't know about this cloud thing. I don't know about the SharePoint thing. But I kind of think we're supposed to go this way. Everybody says it's great. But we're not totally sold. I mean, we were still talking about competitors to SharePoint, and maybe they should go that direction. And this was, I mean, I think maybe more than a year of conversations that it took to get them educated, to get them understanding what we could do and how we could do it. And that very first project, we came in and we took that policies and procedures library, and instead of, they had folder after folder after folder and acronyms and just messy. And we came in and did metadata, and we gave them a search-based page. So if you think about how you search for shoes on Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. If you go out to Amazon and try to go folder in a folder in a folder to find something, you'd be out there all day.
Yeah.
But if you search for shoes and you go, okay, well, I'm just going to check my boxes. I want a size 7 and I want them to be black and I want Nikes. And you have really relevant search results across many different stores. And so that was the same concept we brought to them for their policies and procedures. We said, okay, you can search for a keyword, but now I'm going to filter by language because they were global, and I could filter by department, and I could filter on whether it was a form or a policy. And so we took that keyword to the next level by creating a search environment very similar to an experience that they have at home. many people know how to shop at Amazon on Amazon.com. Here's, you know, working in the same manner. And so we were able to change their mindset over, we don't have to bury everything in a folder. We can search for it in the same way that we do things at home. Mm-hmm. And that was the first break that we had with them to go, gosh, the light bulb went off and they went, oh, this is interesting, right? This is a different way of working. But we were still kind of like, okay, now what's next? How do we get to the next level? And we shared a case study with them where one of their, I think it was like a joint venture company, something along those lines, where they were getting into 365 and they were like, okay, well, we're kind of following what this other group is doing. We've kind of bought in, but we don't really know what's next. And that group was using 365 video for their quality team. And so like, out in the manufacturing plants on the floor, they would have quality issues, but they would have communication issues across all the plants because they'd run into that same issue over and over and it wasn't getting communicated. This group in the case study had implemented 365 video so that they could collaborate around that video. And all of a sudden, the executive team, it was like the gates opened and it was like quality impacts our bottom line. You talk ROI and it was like game on at that point. They were like, how do we do this? How do we get there? And in 2 years, we took them from that simple example of policies and procedures to a multilingual, I think they were up to 7 languages on their homepage, multilingual intranet with, they eventually rolled out Skype for Business. They had Surface Hubs. They rolled into Microsoft Teams later on as that was released, forms all the way down to the manufacturing plant floor. And, you know, we had developed some of those forms for tablets and found that they were actually using their cell phones because they were so easy to use. And so here's an organization that started with just, you know, this .NET intranet that was clunky, that transitioned digital workplace 2 years, that they've completely changed the way they work. They've changed the way they communicate globally. And they've got this great platform that they were paying the same amount when they got started as when they got done, because it was all just included. They were just taking advantage of what they already owned.
Yeah.
And then they were starting to look into Dynamics and CRM and being able to pull in, okay, how do we connect all that we're doing on the operational side with our sales process? So it was a really cool opportunity for us. That was like the first time we really came in and, you know, really hit it big. And we went, this is something. This is cool. And that's where my passion is. It's like we changed the way an organization worked. And that was really cool for us.
Let's take a quick break. This podcast is sponsored by Unstoppable Software, a Cincinnati-based technology consulting firm. At Unstoppable Software, we bolt on to your company's team and accelerate their ability to deliver custom software development projects. With our deep experience in manufacturing, engineering, and healthcare, we can tailor systems for process improvement, data analytics, machine learning, and document workflow so they become a user-friendly, perfect fit for your employees and the way they want to work. To learn more about how we make our clients unstoppable, visit us at unstoppablesoftware.com or call us at 513-382-8499. And now, back to Unstoppable Talk.
Yeah, it's amazing how much digital tools like do that, you know, just their capability to completely change the way someone's working or the whole business is functioning. And you talked about, you know, some of those selling points. And I think those are probably selling points for anybody looking at, or at least some of the selling points for anybody looking at rolling something like this out. I mean, you talked about, you know, reduced total cost of ownership, you know, if you don't have your own servers on site and doing cloud stuff. With the search stuff, you know, if you call it like federated search or whatever you want to kind of call that, it's that visibility. I think it's the same for quality management too. It's about just visibility into what is actually happening, you know, in your company. But there's also this market drive, I think, of people want to have tools within their walls of their business that are at least as good as what they have at home for their, you know, you've got your Alexa at home that can tell you whatever by speech recognition. How many companies have something to that level of ease of use for what they do in their job, right? And like you said, a lot of companies, they might have some clunky thing that's out of date or whatever. And so when they get something, you know, more, I don't know what you call it, Web 3.0 or
modern,
whatever,
we modern, say modern enough,
you know, in there, Web 9.0 or whatever, eventually we'll get to, like, they keep on adding, you know, different web versions. You know, it can transform the way everything looks. I guess, are there other drivers you think in the market that are driving people to make some of these other changes and you know, outside of the ones we listed off here?
I think the speed of business is important. People are starting to understand that their competitors are doing this, and if they're not, they're behind. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, we've got a whole new wave of young people coming out of school, coming out of college. They've literally been holding devices their whole life. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to figure out how to mesh those people with those that have been using, you know, printing paper and using Excel spreadsheets for everything. And these kids coming in, they're like, this isn't okay. Like, why can't I do this with my phone? They're confused, right? Yeah. So you've got to start accommodating those coming out of school, because they're the future. They've got all these great ideas and you want to integrate them, but they're going to be attracted to the companies that are moving forward and to the companies that are innovating, because that's what they demand. They have it every day in their personal lives, and they're expecting it in the workplace. And so if you're wanting to recruit and retain top talent, it's a huge factor because they are looking for that. They're looking for flexibility. They're looking for modernization. They're looking for ways they can contribute and make a big impact. And so I think that's another kind of factor that maybe kind of sits in the background, mm-hmm. that's lingering, that I think is going to be a really big push here in the next 5 to 10 years. It's going to make a big difference for hiring.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I remember probably 10 years ago, I had a gentleman I was working with that, you know, he was right near retirement age, and he came and he said, we had this kid, quote unquote kid, he just quit because he doesn't like the computer software that we have. And to him, that was like quitting because he didn't like the coffee at the office. Just complete insane that we do that, right? And I kind of said, no, it's more like if you're a mechanic and your company gives you, you know, busted, broken tools to work with, like you would quit for that, right? Or you'd buy your own, right? Yeah. And so, of course, we see that too, right? It'll bring your own device type stuff happening that you got to support. But no, I think that's huge. And you know, 10 years ago, I think that was something that people kind of laughed about a little bit, but I've had numerous customers now say, well, we have to make sure the millennials are happy. We have to make sure this is part, it's like top three reason, which is pretty crazy. It used to be like, you know, reason number 15.
Go put the young kid in the corner, right?
Like, it's a different, we different... might as well do this. I guess it'll keep them happy too. But now it's like, we're getting people not taking a job because they say, you know, I don't know, what kind of email do you have? And if you say, we have X that, you know, I don't know, or asking like, do we get a cell phone with the job? Do we get a laptop with the job? I mean, more simple questions like that. And if you say no, you know, we have a desktop computer for you or something, it's a problem.
So. It matters. It's a competitive edge for sure.
Yeah. So when you look at, you talk about these client stories, and when you look across all your clients, I mean, when you talk about ROI, so what, you know, maybe you have to look over several years, I don't know, but what do you think average, you know, dollar savings, percentage savings, something, what is a real dollar value to rolling out some of the solutions?
That's the big question. We really struggle in a collaboration space to determine ROI. And a lot of that's because we don't necessarily have the measurement from where we started. Mm-hmm. If you think about the process improvement in something as simple as a vacation request, how much time did it take you to address the request? If it was sitting in your email inbox, if it was on a paper on your desk, what's the efficiency in being able to push that through more quickly by an electronic form? Mm-hmm. That might not be the right thing to ask. The efficiency might be that I can look and notice, maybe if I had approved 3 different vacation requests in my email at 3 different times, it never occurred to me that 3 of them were on the same day. Mm-hmm. And that same day happened to be exactly when we were going live with one of our best customers. because I didn't have any context around it. But if I'm putting all that into an online system, I have a dashboard and I can see that maybe one other person's already requested off. That's all we can handle that particular day. These other two really need to take time off at a different time. That's a really basic example, but that real-time data, going back to that manufacturing plant floor, right? They were putting in audit forms in their phone, and that's coming back into a dashboard, which goes into Power BI, which is another piece of the 365 stack. You know, dashboards and real-time data, they're game changers. So, you know, it's so hard to put ROI around that stuff because we don't necessarily know where we were when it started. And we don't even anticipate how good that next step is because we can't even imagine what's possible.
Yeah.
So that's, there are no numbers. Yeah. I don't have numbers. We are desperate. We are trying to figure out a way to put numbers against that. You know, the easiest one is moving your conferencing into Teams. If you're paying for WebEx or, you know, any of those competitors that, you know, Zoom or whatever it is, that's an easy one. You move that into Teams and, you know, that's a pretty comparable solution from a conferencing standpoint. You're going to save a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, I think, and often the best ROI numbers you're going to get are they going to be the ones your clients give you. So you kind of have to ask them, because anything you say, they're not going to buy. They're not going to believe, you know, if you say, oh, you're going to save $1 million a month. Right. Okay, sure. You know, but if you say, hey, if you have 600 people and they save 5 minutes a week, what does that actually save you? You know, and then we'll do that 30 times, right? You know, they'll tell you, oh, heck, that saves us $1 million a month. And you say, see, you know, okay, and write that number down, right? So, I mean, it's tricky, you know, I think that sort of stuff, but it's definitely out there, but it can be, you know, very hard to tabulate, I guess. You know,
what is the speed of communication worth in your organization?
Yeah. Well, and how much does a mistake cost?
Yep.
You know, like triple booking a vacation, what does it really cost to fix it? Something.
Something.
You know,
yep.
It's not zero, you know. How do you select projects you're going to work on, and what do you think, you know, what are you really looking to do? What's your ideal client really look like?
It's funny because a lot of folks ask, like, well, what industry do you focus on? And we ran our numbers and we are even across every industry. It's like, if you have Office 365, we can work with you, right? And so it really becomes, it's not about the type of business. We work with small businesses, we work with large businesses, but what we're really seeking, if we kind of narrow down what that field looks like, is an organization that understands that they need change and that understands and is willing to put forth the effort it takes to do something about needing that change, because you can't just roll out technology and expect people to use it. And that's one of the biggest mistakes that we see is, you know, there's just this expectation. Well, I gave them Teams. Why aren't they using it? You know, they gave them a SharePoint intranet. Nobody cares. And what really needs to happen is an understanding internally that it's more than just the tech. It takes time. You have to do your discovery. You have to figure out the pain points. And then when you implement it, you want involvement from your stakeholders. You don't want to put this into a silo and then just deploy it and say, here you go. You want feedback. You want ownership. You want accountability from those groups. So involving them early on really helps you kind of gain all of that. And so we're looking for organizations that are ready and willing to make change, to involve their business, to kind of get outside of that stigma that, you know, well, their business users don't know what they're doing. Because they do. They know and understand their business. They know and understand their role. It's our job to help translate that technology for that business role. And so, you know, that's really what we're looking for, is the organizations that are open to these ideas, that are excited about change, and that will support it top down.
Yeah.
That's going to be our best experience. And like I said, it doesn't matter the industry. It doesn't matter the size of the organization. It's about the mindset of that organization and whether or not they're ready for that.
The culture and all that, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely a culture thing. And I hear all the time, our people, we have file shares and they've been doing this and we're a mess, and anybody can get started. Anybody. You kind of dig your way out of a corner, right? Or work your way out of a corner. You just get started somewhere. As long as you've got the mindset to change, it doesn't matter where you start.
And so if once you've found an organization that is embracing change, how do you execute on that project? What are the sort of logistics around that? What is, you know, maybe what is working with you look like?
We're big fans of discovery, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And the reason why that's important, I can't tell you how many times I've been handed a requirements document like, here, this is what we want. Mm-hmm. And we'll read it and we know they don't even know what's possible yet.
Yeah.
So we like to work with folks that if we can come back to you and say, this is a great start on your requirements, what we'd love to do is pick this apart a little bit. Let us come on site. Let's talk about it. Let's meet with the groups. Let's kind of get some additional feedback. Let's expand on those requirements. And let's really understand, what are your pain points? Where do you want to go? What are your goals? What do you want to get out of this? And then we can also educate. Here are the tools. Here are how other people use those tools. The prime example is just coming to us and saying, we want SharePoint. Well, do you want just SharePoint or do you want Teams? Have you thought about Teams? You know, what about all these other things? So we just like to expand the scope a little bit, mm-hmm. look at it from a larger roadmap perspective. Where do you want to go long term? What are your short term goals? How do, you know, we help you figure out how to get there. You don't even have to know, you know, anything about SharePoint. You don't have to know anything about Teams. That's not your role. You tell us as a business what you need in order to get your job done. We'll help you figure out how to implement the technology side of things. And that's really where we like to get started. A lot of education, a lot of conversations, and a lot of learning on both sides.
Okay. And then once you kind of get through that, do you find that are folks going on site to customer sites a lot? And how does that sort of look?
It's amazing what you can learn simply by walking in someone's conference room. Mm-hmm. And so we're big fans of being on site. We like to be on site early on during the sales process, and we like to be on site during discovery. Mm-hmm. I can tell you a lot about an organization. When you walk into that conference room and there's no projector, there's no TV, and then everyone walks in with a paper pad and a pen,
yeah.
You're going, okay, I know where we're starting,
yeah,
right? Like, it's not judgment. It's not judgment. It's saying, I know where this organization's culture is in this point in time,
yeah.
And I know that this technology will be a slower uptick for them. It'll be a bigger learning curve, and that's okay. But we like to know that up front so we know how to approach you. Hmm. And we know this even before we start the conversation. So little things like that you don't necessarily see, you know, that the only indicator you really have on the phone is if you set up a conference call and nobody knows how to join the conference call. Mm-hmm. That's also an indicator, right? And again, there's no judgment. It's just a matter of understanding where they're at.
Yeah.
And being on site, getting to know the culture, getting to know the people is more than half of what that discovery is about. It's not just about the processes and the technical pieces. It's about, who are they? What do they want to accomplish? How do they operate every day? And we love to be on site in front of people during that process.
Yeah. And we were talking earlier about most of your clients are not based here in Cincinnati, I think. And so there's a fair amount of travel involved to some degree for those types of clients. But I guess being based in Cincinnati here, what have you sort of learned about this local tech market, and you know, what is that community like, I guess, here for Microsoft or for you with in terms of your business?
Yeah, I think the Cincinnati market's fantastic. I've been in IT here in Cincinnati for the better part of 15 years. I know a lot of the local folks in tech, and I think it's a great community, both from a startup perspective and from a technical perspective. And lots of headquarters, lots of good business here, and lots of technology and lots of things going on. So I think it's great. And the only reason we haven't really stuck around in terms of business, we've just had, you know, there's a lot of other organizations here that do what we do. So, you know, we've gone elsewhere to kind of find easy markets to play in and to get started as a new business, as you know. Sometimes being a younger business is hard when there's a lot of competition, but I think we're ready to be back. We've been around 7 years. I think we're pretty strong. We've got a lot of really highly skilled folks on staff. So I don't know, you might see me around Cincinnati a little more often.
And how are those clients finding you, and what kind of marketing and outreach and stuff are you doing to, you know, get into those areas, you know, outside of the city or locally?
Yeah, so we do quite a bit of marketing. We actually hit the 55 and 5 top Microsoft partners for marketing, which was a huge honor. Shout out to our director of operations and marketing, Stacey Burris. She's fantastic. She's done a really great job. So we do a lot. We are very social as an organization. So we're out doing the conferences, like I mentioned before. We've got MVPs on staff, so you'll see us out at local events, but you'll also see us doing webinars. We have the Joy of SharePoint webinar that we do on a monthly basis. A lot of good power user admin kind of content going on there. You'll see us out on Twitter. We do a lot of blogging on our website, pategroup.com. We've got a blog there. And just in general, we have a lot of good relationships. We work with some pretty sizable vendors to partner with them. And we love, it's always better when you get a lead from someone that already knows you. Mm-hmm. And, those are the best kind of leads because they kind of come in and they're familiar with whoever you work with, your vendor, your relationship, your friend, whomever it is. They come in a little warm and they kind of have a good feeling because IT is very much about trust. Mm-hmm. You're making a big change. And when you're implementing something like 365, it's kind of scary. You're going to the cloud. You're responsible for going to the cloud. And you're like, man, if anybody gets into this environment, if I do this wrong, we're spending so much money. Like, it's not just a decision, it's your career. And you feel like your career is on the line for that decision.
Yeah.
And we try to make that an easy transition and build that trust with our customers. And so, that's when they come in from a referral, it's a little easier to build that trust because I think innately everyone's pretty guarded when it comes to making these kind of decisions. Mm-hmm. And you really need to work a little harder to earn that trust up front. So,
well, I think also the discovery process you mentioned helps build a lot of that trust too. I mean, starting off small, just so that people can get an idea of how you work and who you are.
Absolutely.
Rather than just jumping into some six-figure contract or something. Like,
yeah.
No one does that, right?
And we start small, and that's why, right? Yeah. We try to make it low risk. You come in, we'll do discovery. We're not quoting the whole implementation until you get to know us and we get to know you. We feel like it's a little more fair that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so in addition to the recognition you got from Microsoft, which I guess is sort of based on the volume or your investment in marketing of their stuff sort of is what that was for. Is that right?
So the 55 and 5 recognition that we received was really about watching your activity in kind of the social media environment. So whether it's Twitter, whether it's blogging, Facebook, et cetera, they're kind of watching you to see how often are you posting and are you getting any traction or any engagement with your posts? And so we were honored to be in that that top list. I think I'm trying to think of how many there were on the list, but to even make it on that list was huge.
Yeah.
In a really big honor. Which
certainly
means,
thousands of companies, I would assume, in the U.S.
I think like 49,000 were reviewed, and to end up in that top 50 was just huge. So we were really honored.
Yeah, and in addition to that, you also won an award recently more just for your growth and stuff as a company here, which I guess was that from the Business Courier, is that right?
Yeah, so the Cincinnati Business Courier every year awards, they call it the Fast 55 Awards, and it's for those companies here in Cincinnati that are experiencing a lot of growth. Mm-hmm. And so for us, year-over-year growth over the past 3 years. We submitted and just thought, we'll see what happens. And there we were. Now they do an award even amongst the folks that get recognition. And of course, we didn't win the award, but we were recognized as the top, gosh, I'm trying to think of how many were in that group, maybe top 10 or so within our category. So we're not, being a small business, we're not up against like the really large companies.
Yeah.
They of course have different levels of competition, and we're in the smallest business category, but definitely growing fast and looking to continue to grow, hiring now actually. Mm. So hoping to bring some new folks on board here at the end of the year.
Okay. And how have you kind of managed that growth successfully and not sort of, lost control of it as it's grown.
It's interesting. I think owning a business it's a lot of the people side of things, right? I think you kind of come into owning a business and think the hardest part is going to be to find sales and to do the technical work, and it's actually managing the people and making sure that your employees are happy. And I'm really excited because we actually had two employees recently pass the 5-year mark. We've got more kind of coming right in behind them. So I really feel like our scaling has been consistent growth, but not too fast. We didn't want to grow too fast. We've done it in a very steady way so that it was manageable. And it's all about the people. It's about our culture, making sure that our employees have goals to work towards, that we're supportive of those goals, that we're giving them opportunities to grow their skill sets. And of course, in 365, there's never a dull moment. There's always something to learn. But making sure they have the resources to do their job effectively and that they're well supported. So that's been a really big piece of our growth, is just making sure our people are well taken care of.
Awesome. You also, we talked a little bit about speaking engagements that you're doing. You have a pretty big one coming up here in November in Orlando for Microsoft.
Yes. So Microsoft's biggest conference of the year, Microsoft Ignite, coming up this November. Basically, it's like all, it used to be kind of an IT pro focused conference, technical conference, and they're really branching out into more developer type topics as well this year. But there's a ton of people descending on Orlando to come down and learn all about Microsoft's latest updates. So they kind of store up their big updates for this conference. So we'll hear all the new things that are coming out. They'll be doing lots of demos and sessions. The expo center, the expo floor will have all the vendors. If you want to go talk to folks that are selling products around 365 and Azure space, it's just a really great conference.
Okay. And what are you speaking on there?
So I'm taking a departure from my normal technical sessions, and I will be part of the diversity in tech group. And it is a fantastic kind of division that Microsoft's really focused on this year. There's a big push, I think, for diversity in a lot of organizations, and Microsoft is fully embracing that as well. And so what I'll be speaking on, several different topics. The first is how to become a Microsoft MVP. Mm-hmm. And that's, if you think about it from a US perspective, that's one thing. We have a lot of opportunity here, but it also impacts greatly those in other countries. Microsoft Ignite pulls in a lot of people from other countries. And so this is sometimes their first experience of learning about the opportunities to work with Microsoft more directly. And last year, I know they had a woman who attended and is now, I believe, her country's first Microsoft MVP. Hmm. And so it's, my session is really just going to be helping others. How do I go and share what I know with my community? How do I make an impact in my local community as a Microsoft MVP? And what are some of the cool, fun things I get to do as a result of that too? So that's one session. The other session I'll be doing is about how to be a good mentor and mentee. And one of the programs I participate in through the Microsoft Diversity and Tech Group is the mentoring program. Hmm. And Microsoft will match anybody, really. If you just sign up, they have a new app, and you can sign up for this app. I'm blanking on the name of it, but we can put it in the show notes.
Sure.
And you can get matched with someone. So if you're, someone, you're like, man, I really wish I had a mentor, but I just don't know anybody. It's a great way to get connected with someone in your space, someone that shares your interests or that's maybe a step ahead of you in their career. And I've been participating as a mentor probably about a year now. Hmm. And it's fantastic. It's so much fun to help someone grow and learn. And, the benefit, I'm also learning from them too. And I've had a really great experience. So I'm going to talk a little bit about being a mentor, being a mentee, how I've had personal success with my mentee, and just some tips and tricks and things like that to have a good experience. But that's fun.
So who are you? I mean, tell me a little bit about your mentee, I guess. I mean,
yeah. Shout out to another shout out for Mike Swantek. He's given me permission to use his name if I talk about him in the podcast. But he is someone who is just looking to get into the Microsoft community, looking to do more speaking and blogging, but also looking to kind of strengthen his skills at work and his career. And so, we've been talking, we talk every other week for an hour, and nice. We just talk about what's going on at work. How are you doing on social media? Do you have any questions, concerns? We just talk through it, and we make book suggestions for each other, different things that we've run into. And it's been so much fun. He's a great guy, and he is killing it right now. He's doing a great job. And I'm pretty excited because he's doing one of his first SharePoint Saturday speaking engagements here coming up, I believe in Pittsburgh, okay. If I have that right. So very excited. Love to see people grow and do new exciting things. It's awesome. Really cool.
You see him in Cincinnati as well? Or?
He's actually based out of Michigan. Okay. So yeah, so it's again, remote, right? Yeah, we hop on Teams and we have a Teams conference call. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. So for folks that are out there listening and you know, have learned about what you do, what are some of the top three reasons that they should reach out to you, and the top three things that, you know, you can help them with at PateGroup?
So I would say number one, first and foremost, Office 365. If you're looking to create a modern workplace or improve your collaboration, whether that's a SharePoint intranet, using Microsoft Teams, kind of learning about the 365 ecosystem, we've got folks who can do anything from intranet design to user adoption, training, sitting down and going, what the heck do we do with this Office 365 thing? That whole deployment planning engagement is something that we always start with. But we also have folks that can still do custom development, forms and workflow, Power Apps, Microsoft Flow. We are Microsoft Business Applications partners as well. We're a charter partner in the BizApps program. So super excited about that too. So lots of different skill sets. If you need help, definitely a big space for us.
Great.
So number two was just talking about diversity in tech and the mentorship program. So if you want to learn anything more about that space, either what I'm talking about at Ignite or how you can get involved locally, we'd love to hear from you on that.
Okay.
And number three, entrepreneurship. I love what I do. Owning a small business is fantastic. It has its ups and downs. It's not perfect, but it's been a really cool ride. And so love to talk about that stuff.
Okay.
Love to connect with people, especially locally here in Cincinnati, trying to get out a little more. Yeah.
And if folks want to connect with you, what are your web, email, phone details? Yep.
So you can connect with me. So we'll do social media first, maybe Twitter, Steph K. Donahue. And you can find me at pategroup.com. And email address, S. Donahue. It's S-D-O-N-A-H-U-E at pategroup.com.
Awesome. So thank you so much for being on the show, Stephanie. It's been great to hear what you're doing and learn more about that Microsoft Office 365 environment and all the cool stuff going on there.
Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun, and maybe we can trade. I'll have you on my podcast as well.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, and your podcast is called Techsplaining, I believe, right?
Yes, Techsplaining. Okay. Yep, great. And I'm on there with three other Microsoft MVPs, one of which I work with, my business partner, Mark Rackley, and two other Microsoft MVPs. So we talk all things tech.
Awesome. I'll link to that as well. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.